Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge today. Glad you could listen. During this hour of the show, we'll talk about growing things around the house and garden, something we do once a month on the show with Sandy Mason. She's the horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County, and she's good enough to join us on the second Tuesday of each month at 10 o'clock to take your questions. That's what this show is all about. The phone number around Champaign-Urbana to call is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL if you match the letters with the numbers. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you are hearing us around Illinois, Indiana, parts of the other states where the signal travels, 800-222-9455. Questions are welcome, 333-WILL and 800-222-WILL. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here again.
Sure. I'm actually, this is that time of year I'm really glad I have an indoor job.
Yes, definitely. On a day like this, the last few days have been pretty brutal outside.
Yeah, really.
But you had a couple things that we should probably pass on for listeners to start before we take calls.
Yeah, we actually have a couple of great events coming up if people are interested in it. On Wednesday, August 1st, there's going to be a golf outing to benefit the University of Illinois Arboretum, and it's going to be a golf scramble. I'm not a golfer, so I don't always know what all these terms mean, so I have to bear with me here.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to show your support for the University of Illinois Arboretum. As you know, and a lot of people know, the Master Gardener Idea Garden is part of that arboretum, and we really want to get that going, this whole arboretum going. So this would be a great opportunity for people to do that. So on Wednesday, August 1st is the golf scramble. It's going to be out at the U of I Orange Course. If people have questions or want more information, they can call 244-1693. And then the next day, on Thursday, August 2nd, is actually the U of I Turfgrass and Landscape Field Day out at the Horticulture Research Center and also at the Hartley Garden. So it's a great opportunity for people to see, you know, what's going on at the U of I in the way of turfgrass landscape research. There's also vendors out there. You can see what kind of products are out there. So it's a great opportunity. It's probably mainly for commercial folks, but certainly for if people are really, really into gardening and landscaping, they might want to check that out on August 2nd out at the Landscape Hort Research Farm. And if they have questions about that particular event on August 2nd, they can call 333-7847.
Good. And they can call here if they didn't get those numbers and they want them.
We
have a call to talk with already. I wonder if they're calling about Japanese beetles.
Should we bet? Oh, no, we can't do that.
No, we cannot. let's find out. This is a listener in Urbana, line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. I think that that you might be right.
you should have let me bet.
Oh, darn it.
Okay.
We have grape arbor out back.
Yeah.
Been noticing the kind of iridescent square beetles devouring the leaves and having a little bit of fun on top of it. and I'm wondering how to get rid of them.
Yeah, boy, it's really tough. And the reason I said the whole idea of the Japanese beetle, because you're not alone. They arrived at the end of June. I think about June 26th they arrived. They're going to be hanging out from July through August. So realize they don't stay the whole season, so they usually come late. And I'm trying to help you feel a little bit better about all this. Generally, they're not life-threatening on woody plants. So things like grapes and our woody plants, roses and stuff, I know it looks bad. They skeletonize the leaves. It really looks horrible. But generally, it's not going to be life-threatening for the plant. So a lot of it is aesthetic injury. So just to sort of keep that in mind. Especially if you're wanting the grapes or if you're wanting shade, like with a grape arbor, you may decide you want to do a few things. So what you could do, there's a couple of products that are mentioned or are listed for control for Japanese beetles. Seven is also listed as carbaryl, is something that's listed for Japanese beetle control, so it is an insecticide. You'd want to use it according to label directions. It does have a wide label, so you can use it on a variety of plants. Of course, the thing to always keep in mind with a seven especially, as well as any other insecticides for the most part, is that that is one that will kill off honeybees as well as a lot of the beneficial insects. So this would definitely be a product I would only use on a plant that you really feel like, you know, maybe right next to the front door, or you just really feel like you can't tolerate the injury that might be occurring on it. So you might think about that. We are trying something. I'm trying it at my home as well as out at the U of I Idea Garden, is a product called Piola. And it's a combination of canola oil and a pyrethrin. The nice thing about it, it is safer for beneficial insects. And so in that respect, it is something that we might want to try. I'm not sure it's available locally at all, but I know you can get it through Gardens Alive catalog. And it seems to be working fairly well. I've used it, actually. It was a dark, dark day on Sunday. I live in Monticello, and I haven't had Japanese beetles at all. But on Sunday, they showed up on my roses. And so it was quite a dark day for me. But I did try the pyola on it, and within a half hour, those that I'd sprayed it on had dropped to the ground. Realized they don't have a long residual. A lot of these products are going to have to be sprayed. You're going to have to use it according to label directions. They'll tell you how often you have to spray them. So one spray isn't going to do it. You know, on small populations, if people have maybe just a few here and there, they can actually, in the morning when it's still kind of cool, if you just kind of hit the plant, they'll actually drop into like a soapy bucket of water kind of thing, and actually can get rid of small populations that way, or if you just want to harvest them that way every morning. So there's a couple different routes to go. I guess the one we don't recommend is the Japanese beetle traps. If you really have large populations, what's going to happen is those traps are just going to attract more. They really have done numerous studies and have found that with large populations, there's a lot more that get attracted to the traps that ever make it into the trap. So it's not something you want to do. So that would be one thing I'd probably stay away from.
How do you spell the
pyola? It's P-Y-O-L-A.
Okay.
And it has a nice wide label. I think that's the other thing that I like about it. It can be used on edible plants. Because what you find with Japanese beetle, you know, grapes is probably one of their absolute favorites, but there's like 300 different species of plants that they like, so it's kind of tough. But grapes are certainly right up there, the first one. Raspberries are the other ones, you know, just right up there is one of their favorite things to eat. So good luck.
Okay, I've been spraying soapy water directly on the leaf that they've been eating, and that seems to have cut the population some.
Does that seem to have?
That you think is effective? Or
pardon?
Spring soapy water onto the leaves to drop, and it's cut the population, but I don't know
if
I'm damaging the grapes or the leaves at all.
Right. That would certainly be, I mean, you have a good concern, because that would certainly be the thing that we would be concerned about. They really have found that things like the insecticidal soap, things that are really meant, the soapy sprays that are meant to be sprayed on plants, haven't been all that terribly effective on hard-bodied insects. So things like Japanese beetles and a lot of the beetles are just not very effective
for... So it was just dish soap. It wasn't insecticidal soap.
Right. But I'm just sort of letting you know that a lot of the soapy kinds of things, the concern, of course, with dish soap is that it might actually hurt the plant. So that would be certainly a concern, too. So,
well, I'll see if I can get a hold of some of this pyola.
Yeah, you might see how it works for you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Okay, bye.
Thanks.
Tough problem.
Yeah. So they're going to hang around until August, and the next year we'll have the same repeating situation.
Yeah, it does vary. It does seem to vary. I certainly have talked to people where 1 year it was particularly bad for them, and then the next year they didn't quite have so many. So we can't always assume that it's sort of this exponential growth. But certainly if you have them in an area, you'll probably find that from now on you're probably going to have at least some in that same area. But, you know, they fly great distances. That's the other problem is that because they do fly great distances, they can easily fly, you know, they found, you know, 13 miles within a season, they might, because they tend to fly from plant to plant, so certainly within a season, they might be quite a few miles from where they started out. So that ends up being a little bit more difficult to try and control them, too.
Have you observed that this is a particularly good year for insects in general?
It's always a good year for insects, isn't it? You know, I think every year, you know, what you'll find is that certain insects seem to do better than others with any year. So I'm not sure I can say that this year is particularly better for insects.
Okay. Well, butterflies are abundant, shall we say, this year. And Michael Jeffords called this the year of the butterfly because there's so many that they're doing so well. The other thing I notice is that there are these killer mosquitoes that when I go out in my garden at night, they're like vultures. I mean, they're large. They're large mosquitoes, and they hurt when they bite. And I don't usually have a problem with mosquitoes, but...
Yeah, that well, and certainly when we get some moisture, when we get a few rains, and a lot of those floodplain types of mosquitoes start coming out too. So.
Well, we have a couple callers. Let's get on and talk with them. Next listener in Robinson on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Thank you, Jack. Sandy, your advice is almost invariably to the point and good, but I'm concerned with your use again of the phrase not life-threatening about Japanese beetles. This past winter, I lost old rose bushes, which had survived many previous years, and it was not a particularly severe winter. And I attribute it to the fact that the beetles defoliated the rose bushes last year. The beetles go away in August. The rose bushes spend their last bit of energy in putting out brand new growth, which then is tender when freezes come. Freezes, and the plant left without energy simply died. So I kind of like to ask you personally to think about the fact that they can be life-threatening.
Well, I think, I mean, you bring up a good point. I think the thing to keep in mind is, I should have made it a little bit clearer, on healthy plants that are doing well, it's not going to be a life-threatening situation for them. A lot of the woody plants are going to do just fine. So I will say a couple of things, but you're absolutely right. It's certainly a stress whenever they lose their leaves like that. You're absolutely right. It puts them into stress, and if a plant is already under stress for other reasons, it's not a good thing. I mean, you're absolutely right. But the one thing I will tell you is, even though we don't think of this past winter as being all that terribly bad, I've talked to a lot of people that have lost plants, myself included, that had been there for many, many years, but this past winter they died. And I think it's because, remember all that snow we had in December? We very seldom get that kind of snow, and then it stayed. And I think a lot of the plants were not winter hardy at that point. You know, if that snow had occurred in January, they'd been just fine. But it got cold quick, and it stayed cold. And for a lot of the plants, they just weren't ready for it. And you're right, you know, a lot of the roses certainly will kick out new leaves and actually start blooming again once the Japanese beetles will leave. So they generally do a little resurgence their late season, and it absolutely does make it more succulent growth. But I would also say it's because of the winter that we had. Even though it wasn't terribly cold, December was a weird month for us. I mean, it really was.
Well, to counter that a little bit,
could debate this all day probably, but
the books all say that snow that lingers is best for plants,
but
an alternate freeze and thaw.
But
I won't belabor that.
Yeah, but you have to keep in mind they do have to be ready for that. So a snow that stays in January, absolutely right. That's wonderful. We would love to see that happen. But if the plant isn't winter hardy, if it's gone basically from warm to cold, that's not good for them. And we really had that in December. And I've talked to so many people, myself included, with things that had been there for years, and woody plants that had been there for years and just didn't make it. So I have to think that because it was so many different people, it had something to do with the weather that we had. So I'll kind of stick by that, but there's always room for debate.
Okay.
So thanks for your comments.
Right. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Thanks for the call. We'll go next to a listener in Homer on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
my question concerns raspberries. We have new plants not real new. I planted them 2 years ago. But anyway, I had a marvelous harvest this year. And my understanding is I should get another harvest in the fall. But I have tremendous growth out there. Now, this spring, we just went through with the tiller and tilled out. So we had some paths through there, which are now grown up.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do with my plants at this point? Do I go through with the mower and tiller again? And do I mow out the old plants, the new plants, or...
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have any canes that are obviously dead, I would take those out because they'll produce two seasons, and then those canes will die.
Okay.
So if you have any of those, then I'd go ahead and take those out. Any of the ones that produced, I'd go ahead and leave those that aren't obviously dead because that's how you get your second crop. That same cane actually produces a crop twice.
Oh, it's the same cane.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you'd want to leave that unless it's obviously dead, which means it already produced twice.
Okay. Now, after I get my fall crop, do I wait till spring and kind of go through there again, or do I take out some things this fall?
It's still the same kind of thing where you just take out the ones that are obviously dead.
Okay. So
pretty much.
And I have to go crawling around on my hands and knees.
Oh, usually they pop right out. I mean, usually they
just
come right out.
Pull out the dead ones.
Yeah, they usually just pop right out.
Because
so that's really not a problem.
So much growth, I can't go. I just can't get get through there.
Yeah, it's usually, I tell you what it usually is, and I don't know what cycle you're in, but usually what happens is those newer canes produce, actually the new canes that are producing now will go ahead and produce this fall, and then that same cane will produce in the spring, next spring,
okay. And
then it'll die.
Okay.
So usually it's a fall-spring kind of thing, or fall-summer, I guess, is really what it is, kind of thing, for that cane.
Okay, a cane should produce in the fall, then the following spring.
Right, right, and then die.
And then die.
And then you'll get new ones popping up.
Okay.
So I'm not sure where you are in that cycle of things, but...
I don't know. It was fall summer last year, so I don't know really what happened. And then the Japanese beetles...
Oh, of course.
...finished them off before I got a fall crop.
Yeah, right.
I'm into those beetles this year. Not to lose everything.
Yeah, it's really tough. I know it is, because they love raspberries.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely love raspberries.
Okay, well, that helps me a lot.
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for the call. We're talking this morning with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. And we're doing our monthly program on growing things around the house and garden, lawn and garden care, ornamental plants, etc. Any questions you have about such things are welcome. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Or toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. We have another listener waiting on line number 2 in Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. This crosses into a related field. But you were talking about mosquitoes just a little bit ago, and I was wondering whether you knew anything about whether there were a lot of bats in this area, whether putting up a bat house might help me control my mosquitoes. It seems to... We've got resident colonies of bats at a farmhouse that the family owns in Ohio. They live behind the shutters, and we've had a nursery colony of bats in the hiding behind the chimney. So we have a lot of bats. But I don't notice them around here. Maybe I'm just not looking. Do you have any idea whether it's worth putting up a bat house?
Oh, I think it's always worth putting them up. The people that I've talked to said they've put them up and haven't really gotten anything, haven't gotten any bats to sort of take up residence in them. Because a lot of it depends, with bats, it depends on the habitat, too. You know, they like the woodsier areas. They like a certain amount of open water. And so there's certain things that they like. And if those things aren't there, then put up a bat house isn't probably going to help you too much, obviously. So, it's always worth it. Now, is this going to take care of your mosquito problem? It'll certainly help. I mean, bats certainly eat mosquitoes as well as a lot of other insects, and they're certainly healthy to have around in an environment. Is it going to take care of your mosquito problems? That's debatable on whether that's going to be something that's really going to take care of. You might think about other things. Do you have, is there anything around that you might think that might be actually breeding the mosquitoes? Like you have, do you have rain barrels or, any kind of water, anything where there's standing water that might actually be making it worse?
My neighbor has just taken a pond out. I don't know whether we've had a real mosquito problem yet this year. I haven't been able to be outside much in the evening, so I haven't noticed this year.
Yeah, just at Jack's house. Yeah, I think
right.
They're all at Jack's house.
I think
they're
so.
All hanging out over there. So I certainly think about if you have any kind of standing water, even for a short period of time, is enough to get mosquitoes going. So, and they do make these wonderful things. Bacillus, the BT products, and they look like little donuts. And it's actually, you can float these in water, and it's very safe for you and everybody else around. And you could float these things in if you know you're going to have, like, rain barrels or something where you're going to have standing water for any period of time. And they're very effective. I use them on all my rain barrels. So, and usually most garden centers are going to carry those.
Mm. By the way, the Bat Conservation International, which has a website, and they've got a book that I found last year at the Urbana Free Library, has instructions on building a bat house and also how to place it, how to encourage bats, how to make it so that the bats will like it, and exposure and how dark the bat house is. All these things make a difference. Buying one from buying a commercial one may not be enough. You may have to do a little more research.
Right. And that's they have a website, the Bat Conservation?
Yeah, I'm not certain what the website name is, but I'm sure if you use a search engine, you could find it. And last year I called in about Japanese beetles. I just wanted to reiterate how much fun it is to knock them into a container of sudsy water. I get a real sense of revenge. And
entertainment.
And it's a challenge to sneak up on them. You mentioned that they're not as active in cooler weather, the morning and the evening, and that seems to be true. But they have this definite survival instinct. If you knock the leaf a little bit too much, they let go and they roll off.
Yeah.
Or right. If they see your hand moving fast, they let go and roll off. So the task is to sneak up on them.
So cheap entertainment.
Yeah.
The neighborhood kids. People can just get out the neighborhood kids.
Yeah. Take care. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. We have a couple other callers we'll get right to. I just want to say about the mosquitoes in my neck of the woods. They are tough. They are tough mosquitoes. I looked at one the other day. I saw a tattoo on his arm. I mean, this is a tough mosquito. They've got a bad attitude, let me tell you. We're about at our midpoint with Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. We have a couple callers waiting. We'll get right to the phone numbers again around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-WILL. We'll go next to a listener in Aurora on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
I have two questions. The first one, I have a lavender plant that I've had for many years. It's in an area where it is protected, and it's grown very well. But this year, it's all woody, and it does have some growth on it. But how do you prune it? I read through my books, but none of them said how to prune a lavender.
Yeah, well, usually in the spring is really the time where I've seen it listed to go ahead and prune them, and it's right when they're starting to bud out, so you know what's going to bud out and what's not, kind of thing on lavender, because you know sometimes you can get some dead wood on them, but generally that's the time. I'm not sure, boy. I'm not sure I'd want to do it now, to tell you the truth. I think I'd probably wait till spring. Since they're so touchy making it through the winter and stuff, I think I'd probably wait till next spring. But once they start to bud out, you can see exactly where the leaves are going to come out. And then you know that you're safe, that it's going to go ahead and leaf out at those points. Because some of those woodier parts, it doesn't leaf out on.
Well, so what can I do at this stage to enhance it? Should I put anything in the soil? And how often should I water it? You know, I don't water it, hoping it'll rain.
Yeah.
We haven't had rain for a long time, and I know it doesn't take a lot of water. So I thought, what can I do to enhance whatever I have?
Yeah. Well, you know, you could certainly do some light pruning if you really felt like you wanted to shape it a little bit. I'd do some light pruning. I wouldn't do any heavy pruning at all. If you do want to go ahead, as far as watering, as long as it's in a well-drained spot, and it must be, or it probably wouldn't have made it through the winter all these years, I think I'd water it maybe once every 2 weeks or so, you know, give it a good drink.
That's about,
It really is not one of those, because it really likes to dry out a little bit.
Yeah, I know it comes from the Mediterranean, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. They're a little harder to, because of that, and they need that well-drained soil. Our soils are just generally too good for them. But they do like an alkaline soil. They like that higher pH. So if you do use any type of fertilizer, I'm not sure I'd really fertilize them now.
No, I don't. I'm so afraid of it. I I don't do anything, and it's grown beautifully.
Well, that's good. You must be doing something right then.
Yeah. I think the place where it is what has...
You're absolutely right.
I have a hyacinth bed that I'd like to put some plant over it, an annual. What annual doesn't need a lot of water that I could put over hyacinth bulbs?
I assume, is this full sun, I assume? Or
what?
Is this full sun?
No, it's half sun.
It's half sun. I think, and you're wanting an annual, not a ground cover of some sort? Or
no, I don't want a ground cover. I want something with flowers to kind of liven. Since my lavender bush looks so terrible, I'd want something to kind of enhance the area there, too. Mm-hmm. It's right next to the hyacinths.
Mm-hmm. I guess there's any number of things. I'm trying to think of something that could get. I mean, even petunias will take some shade.
Oh, no, I don't want petunias.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, that dreaded petunia. I'm trying to think of other things that'll take shade. If you give them, well, you don't want to do that. What else? Actually, vinca, the annual vinca, will take some shade and actually will flower fairly well for you. And it doesn't take any any moisture at all for the most part. So it does grow well.
From some woman that comes from India, the vinca in India is a weed. They pull it out all over. It grows every place.
Well, that's probably true for a lot of plants, to tell you the truth. But it doesn't seem to do that here. So, and I'm talking about the annual vinca, the upright one, not the ground cover one.
The thing I wanted to say, I went on a garden walk Saturday, and I would heartily recommend to anybody to go on a garden walk. All day Sunday, that's all I did. I worked in my garden from morning to night after anything that I saw. It is just the most inspiring thing.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Do. And, of course, they were all different kinds. There was your general, there was your Japanese garden.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was just beautiful. And then they had one. That the last one you went to, just when you thought, well, what else could I see? It's no use going to one more, because what else could they do with a garden? But they did it. They had a cottage garden.
Yeah, isn't that great?
And I'll read from the leaflet. A cottage garden provides an escape from a busy day with its brilliant color and many fine details. Take note of the fairy garden where they have a teddy bear tea party with their grandchildren. And it just was, I would tell anybody to go on one. It just, you sure get inspired.
You're right. That's a great way to do that. We certainly have several of them around here as well. So,
thanks very much for the call. Mm-hmm. Our lines are all full, so let's move on and include some more callers. We'll go next to someone in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning.
I have a problem with my tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I planted several tomato plants because I can taste those fresh tomatoes from the garden.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them just died. They just wilted and died. It doesn't look like they've eaten. It doesn't look like they're bug-ridden. Some of them are still living, and they were all doing quite well before.
Mm-hmm.
And they even had tomatoes on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea what caused it or what I can do to prevent that from happening to the rest of them. They're all planted very close to each other.
Mm-hmm. So it just seemed like the plant was there and then it sort of turned yellow or started to wilt. And then
Before it turned yellow, just wilted.
Wilted.
And I was watering them plenty.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't think you overwatered them? That's not an issue, probably.
I don't think so.
Okay. One thing that can happen, a couple of things that it can happen to tomatoes is they actually get a couple wilt diseases, fungal wilt diseases. And, you know, if you ever purchased tomatoes and it'll say VFN or something like that after it, there are tomatoes that are resistant to these two wilt diseases. It's a verticillium and fusarium. And the problem is it's a fungal wilt. These are funguses that are all over the place in the soil. There's not too much you can do about it other than getting resistant varieties. So that would be one thing that I would look for. Whenever you purchase a tomato variety, don't just think about those wonderful tasting tomatoes at the end. Also think about, are they resistant to these wilt diseases? And it'll say V and then F and then sometimes N for nematodes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, V as in Victor, F as in Frank, after the name. And that will tell you that at least they have some resistance to these wilt diseases, so that might be something to do. If you can rotate the tomatoes, I know it's really hard. If we all tend to have small gardens, it's tough to put them in a different spot each year. But if you can put them in a different spot, that sometimes will help as well.
Okay.
So don't always plant them in the same spot. So that's probably what's going on. If you don't have any spots on the leaves, they do get some disease problems that cause spots and then yellowing and then browning. And that usually you'll see spots on the leaves first with those particular diseases.
Okay, but there's nothing I can do.
Not at this point, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Good luck.
Goodbye.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to a listener in Charleston on line number two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning.
What can I plant that rabbits will not eat?
Wow. We actually have lists in the office. Let me see if there's something that I can think of right off the top of my head. I think some of the smellier herbs and stuff, like artemisias and some of those, I don't think the rabbits hit too hard. But there sure isn't a whole lot of them. But I do have a list in my office. If you want to give me a call at 217-333-7672, and I'd be glad to mail that out to you. But there are some out there that they don't like.
217-333-7672.
Uh-huh.
I shall call you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Now, here's the strange thing, because I've talked with a lot of people, including David Inge, who had stuff eaten by rabbits this year and many years. There are rabbits all over my neighborhood. We are lousy with rabbits, okay? They have not touched a thing in my garden.
Are you planting new things? Because the thing I've noticed the most, at least in my garden, is they like the new things that I planted out there, like the new perennials. And especially with perennials, that if I put them in that first year, that's the year they pick on them.
Yeah.
If I can get them through that first year, the next year they don't bother with them.
Well, maybe that's...
There's something about the newness of it that they seem to attack. And that's at least one thing that I've noticed. I think that's why they always pick out annuals for the most part. They're new. There's something new, and they just like to. But I don't know why you don't have them.
Yeah.
There must be something going on out there. I don't know. Do you have big dogs wandering around patrolling the area?
They laugh
anything,
at our dog.
Oh.
They're like, oh, that's a watchdog.
That's
no,
a dog.
Actually, no. They are. We have a dog that chases them, but they come back, and
so
you see them all over the place. It's a good year for rabbits too.
Yes, it seems to be it seems like every year it's a good year for rabbits. But that is seem to be the thing that I've noticed. If I can protect stuff that first year, but it doesn't really help you too much with annuals, I suppose.
All right. Well, let's go on and talk with some more callers. Next up, a listener in Danforth on line number 3. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. I was calling. We have a terrible infestation of the Japanese beetles again this year, and we're trying to start an organic apple and pear orchard, and they're just really going after those. And I wanted to just recommend for people that pyola, again, like you talked about, it does help.
Oh, has that been good for you?
I mean, you have to spray it more often than you might like
and
especially after rain.
So how often are you probably spraying it?
Well, we sprayed it one day, and then the afternoon, of course, we had a thunderstorm, and it washed it all off, and then we sprayed again. But it seems to last, I'd say about 3 or 4 days.
So I don't know
if it's a new batch that hatched out that comes or what.
It's usually they're flying in.
Yeah.
They're just flying in from surrounding areas, so that's usually...
You do have to, but at least it was, the population was lower the second time we sprayed. So I think
So that's good.
It does help, and I just wanted to recommend it because I just feel that, the 7 and those kind of products are killing the honeybees, and we already, don't have many of those anymore because of the, what is it that's getting after the honeybees?
There's a mite, actually. The two mites, different mites are after
so
them.
We hardly have any of those around here, and so I just wanted to let people know that pyola works. And also we are trying something new called Surround. Have you heard about that?
No, what is it?
It's actually a type of clay that you spray it on there and it makes everything look like it's frosted.
Oh, I have seen that. I've never tried it, but I've seen it.
Well, the bugs don't like it because they don't like the texture, of this clay. And that seems to work for all kinds of pests.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great.
And I just want to let people know about that too. And could I give the Gardens Alive number on the air or not?
Sure.
Because I think that's the only place you can get these products.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Organic. Yeah. It's 812-537-8650.
And what was that?
It's called Gardens Alive, and it's a catalog, and I think it's the only place you can get these products.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I've seen that.
Okay.
Good.
Thanks for your comments.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye. We have a couple callers left and just about 15 minutes in this hour remaining with Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County, taking your questions on growing things around the house, everything except Japanese beetles and things like that, that is. And we have a couple callers, time for some others if you'd like to join us. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Questions are welcome. We'll go next to a listener in Charleston on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
I'm wondering if there's some big secret to how to grow good bell peppers. It seems like whenever I try it, they come out being kind of bitter and thin, and there's not much but skin, no flesh. Not the only thing I know of that tastes better if you buy it from the grocery store than if you grow it yourself.
Then something must be going wrong because usually it's not a problem. I guess a couple things. Have you tried different varieties for one thing? Maybe you could just try different varieties.
I've tried lots of different varieties. All of them are the same.
Yeah, they're somewhat temperature dependent. to some extent, I will tell you that sometimes that there is a problem if we have really, really high temperatures, or like tomatoes and a lot of other of the solanaceous type crops, is that they don't set fruit at really high temperatures. So I will tell you that they are somewhat susceptible to some environmental things that go on that you have no control over, obviously. But you should still be getting something halfway decent. They're fairly heavy feeders. I don't know if you do fertilize them, give them compost or something like that to...
I have sometimes, and it didn't seem to make any difference.
Yeah. Full sun, I assume you've got them in?
Yes.
Watering them regularly?
Yes.
Okay. Mulching might help. I'm running out of things here.
So am I.
Have you tried them in different parts of the garden? Maybe there's just something weird at that one spot.
Well, I've tried them in different towns.
Different towns? You'd think that would help. Now, do you start with plants, I assume?
Yes.
So you buy the plants.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting them from different places or something, so that shouldn't be a problem for you. Boy, I'm really running out of options here, to tell you the truth. I'm not sure why else it would necessarily be a problem, as long as you give them plenty of moisture and that kind of thing. Boy, I'm at a loss.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe there's somebody out there, one of the callers, can give us some clues of maybe something that they've experienced. Because, sorry, I'm not... Other than those things, I'm not sure what else would cause problems.
Okay, must be me.
Yeah, I don't know. And because you're not seeing anything that would obviously look diseased, or, you know, spots on the leaves or something like that that would indicate some disease problems, or, you know, spots on the stem, because they actually can get some stem rot problems.
No, they seem very healthy. They grow to a very good size, but there's no flesh. It's just skin.
It's just skin. Hmm. Not sure what to tell you on that one.
Okay.
That's a tough one. Sorry.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
I don't know. That's an odd one. I've never heard that before.
Well, we'll continue on and talk some more callers. Next up, someone in Belgium on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes. Hello. Couple of items. One along the Japanese beetle thing and the Piola.
Mm-hmm.
I use the material too, but it doesn't seem to keep. I don't think anything keeps Japanese beetles off of green beans. They seem to really like my green beans.
Yeah, they keep coming back.
Yeah, but the other thing to talk about is early in the show you mentioned raspberries,
mm-hmm.
and I noticed this year I don't grow them myself, but there are many, many raspberry patches around,
mm-hmm.
and they produce fabulous berries.
Mm-hmm.
But this year the berries were very few in number. And very small. Is that the way people who cultivate them, have they had the same problem?
I haven't really heard that, to tell you the truth. A lot of people said they've had a really good raspberry year.
Hmm.
So it might be just spotty where the certainly...
Yeah, it might be my locale.
Because, oh, yeah.
But, I mean, all the patches I've gone to for, you know, several miles radius around me that I know of.
Have you had plenty of rain this?
Well, you know, we were kind of light there early in the spring.
Yeah, that would...
Might caused it. But I noticed there weren't very many flowers this year on them. You know, the wild raspberries just didn't, you know, how they'll bloom the white flower.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
There didn't seem to be very many of those. I thought maybe you might have heard of something.
I really hadn't heard that to be a problem this year, to tell you the truth.
Okay. Well,
because we've seen some pretty good ones around here, at least.
Okay.
So,
Thanks for the call. Well, we have raspberries, and they did fairly well,
mm-hmm.
actually. They're doing great right now. They're ripening in, you know, a nice period of time so that, you know, there's like a constant... You know, set of ripe berries to pick.
So you're not overwhelmed.
Really yeah, so I go out there at night and get eaten by mosquitoes.
That's why you're getting by mosquitoes.
But anyway, we did have a listener who called in with a suggestion about the pepper plants.
Oh, okay.
And they said putting strike anywhere kitchen matches placed at the base of the pepper plants for the sulfur. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, I guess. A person could try that. I wouldn't think there'd be enough sulfur in a kitchen match to matter to really help all that much, unless you really had a deficient soil, because soils are going to have some sulfur in
mm-hmm,
it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, you know. Might.
Well, that's a suggestion. The listener passed on, so we asked for it, and hopefully that'll help.
Okay.
All right. We have a listener waiting on line number two in Champaign next. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. I have this strange problem. I planted broccoli, and it grew great, but it never flowered. I'm wondering if you've ever heard of that.
Hmm. Boy, we have some odd veggie questions this morning, huh?
It was a different variety. I can't for the life of me find the seed packet, but it was supposed to flower early, and it didn't show the packet didn't show the typical little heads. Instead, it had kind of like sprouts.
Yeah.
Individual flowerettes.
Yeah, right. Because I've got, actually, I don't know if you, would these have been heirloom seeds at all, or older, some of the older varieties?
Ooh, I'm not sure. I can't find the packet.
Because I did grow, the last couple of years, I've grown an heirloom variety called Calabrese, and it never forms these giant heads. I mean, it always has these little sprout, you know, like these small florets coming out, and it never forms the big ones, but that's what it's supposed to do.
I haven't gotten even that.
You haven't even gotten that? I'm really surprised. So, and it's been plenty of time between the time you put it out. You planted them?
March 15th. It was supposed to be an early spring variety, so they've been in for forever, months.
And not a thing, huh?
Nothing.
Not getting too much nitrogen or something that might encourage a lot of leaf growth and not...
Well, I just use the standard Miracle-Gro on them just a couple times.
Yeah. Because sometimes too much nitrogen will pump, they'll do a lot of leaf growth and sometimes will sacrifice flowering. But you should have had something by now. Did you get this from a seed catalog or someplace where you could actually call them and ask them?
I got them locally.
Okay. Because if you knew, you know, maybe what variety and stuff that you had, you might be able to check and see if this has been a problem with that particular variety in the past.
Okay.
But, boy, I would just, you know, if they're still growing well, I think I'd just keep, you know, let them go. Maybe it's just this really long season fall variety.
I mean, they're like, the leaves are like mid-thigh height. I mean,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I just wonder for some reason or other why they're just taking a particularly long time. So your biggest problem, of course, is that now you're going to get all the little caterpillar guys are going to be after them now. So
right.
You're going to have to fight those off for a while. So,
yeah.
But I would, if they're growing well, I would just leave them in. But I don't know why, other than too much nitrogen or something, would keep them from flowering.
So what kind of fertilizer would I use?
Well, I think at this point, if you have halfway fertile soils, I'm not sure I'd do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I would water them on a fairly regular basis. If they should get about an inch of water a week somewhere along the line, make sure they have plenty of moisture.
Okay.
But other than that, I don't think I'd fertilize them at all.
Okay.
And see if you can encourage those flowers to come on.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call. We have just about 5 minutes left with Sandy Mason, and our lines are open, so if you'd like to call in the remaining time, we'll be sure to get your question in. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere you are listening, 800-222-9455. We have just about 5 or 6 minutes left to take your questions. Speaking of broccoli, we have some lovely broccoli plants growing. And I'm getting a little bit concerned. One of them is getting, you know, the flower is getting quite large. Is there a point that you know you should just go ahead and, you know, harvest that?
Oh, yeah. I think especially because they're going to develop really quick. Once
yeah.
we get these high temperatures, they're going to develop really quick. And you want those because, you know, what we're eating is actually the immature flower.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want them to go ahead and open
right.
up because then they start getting bitter and they're just not as good, obviously. So you really want it, no matter how big the head is, once you start seeing those little round things at the top, does that make sense? Once those
yeah.
really start to open, you know, get a little bigger, then you need to pick it. I mean, you really need to pick it fairly early. And if you can just think about what you normally see in the stores
mm-hmm.
on what that looks like, then that's what you go for. And you're going to get, usually they have one big head in the
mm-hmm.
center, and then all these little sprouts will continually come on is normally what you see. So you may not get these huge heads on some. Like the one I was mentioning is really, it's a great one, so you don't have this, you know, 10,000 pounds of broccoli all at once, which is why I like to grow it. You get a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
So,
good. Well, we have a couple callers suddenly. Let's go on and talk with them. We'll go next to a listener on a cell phone on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580. Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go right ahead.
I'm reading my pager.
Are we interrupting you?
Doing this and driving. I have a hibiscus. It's about 10 years old and hasn't flowered in quite a few years.
And what was this again? I'm sorry.
It's a hibiscus.
Oh, hibiscus.
So, several years old, probably 10 or 12, hasn't flowered in quite a while.
So this is the shrubby outdoor one?
Yeah, well, it has to come indoor during the winter.
Oh, okay. So it's the tropical
yes.
looking one. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, they usually should flower. I mean, unless you're doing a lot of heavy pruning or something. Normally, you know, they usually don't do anything in the wintertime. But then once you stick them outside, they start getting some high light and plenty of moisture, because that's the other thing. You want to make sure they get plenty of moisture. They really like you know, being fairly moist consistently, they really should start to flower for you if they're getting plenty of sun.
But heavy pruning isn't good for them?
Well, I would just do it, you know, early in the season. I'd probably, you know, when they come out of the winter doldrums, they often look kind of lanky and don't look all that great. So you can do some fairly heavy pruning then, and then let them go at that point. And then see if that doesn't encourage some new growth. But, boy, they sure should be flowering. If it's that old, it should be flowering by now.
I thought so.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Boy, a lot of finicky plants today. I don't know what's going on. Must be the moon.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for the call. We have one caller remaining in just a couple of minutes, so we'll include them. This is a listener in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I have a flowering quince. And last year, very, very early in the season, the leaves started to turn yellow and then brown, and then they all fell off. This year, it appears to be just starting to do the same thing again, and I'm concerned because I have a tree, a flowering crabapple right next to it, that did the same thing last year, but it actually died this year.
Oh,
I'm
that
wondering
tree.
If I have a disease or something that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing spots on the leaves at all, or does it just seem like they're yellowing?
No, they just they start to turn yellow, and then the tips turn brown, and then they just fall.
Mm-hmm. You might want to, I don't know, where are you located? Are you
in Champaign.
In Champaign. Mm-hmm. You might want to bring a sample, especially since it's just starting, you might want to bring in a nice sample, either to our U of I Extension office. We're at 801 Country Fair Drive there in Champaign, and have us take a look at it. Or you can also take things to the University of Illinois Plant Clinic, which is out on St. Mary's Road at 1401 St. Mary's Road in Urbana. And you might want to have somebody take a look at it, because I have a feeling you probably have a disease problem going on there, but probably is something someone needs to look at first to give you a better idea what's going on.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call. If someone does have, you know, they notice like a disease problem, you mentioned the plant clinic. You know, that's obviously a good resource for people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but certainly they can check with their local extension office, because a lot of the extension offices here in Illinois, as well as other states, they check with their county extension office. A lot of them have master gardener programs, and they're volunteers that are trained to look at plants and give you some ideas about what's going on with things. So check with your local county extension office, and they're usually in the white pages under whatever county you're in, and check with them. And it might be where you can just take it down to them, and they could give you some better ideas. But certainly the U of I Plant Clinic is also something that people can access and actually send samples to them and that kind of thing.
Great. We just have a minute left, Sandy, and maybe for folks who weren't tuned in at the beginning of the show, do you want to mention again the events coming up?
Sure. On Wednesday, August 1st, is a golf scramble to benefit the University of Illinois Arboretum. It starts at 2 o'clock. It's going to be out at the U of I Orange Course, and if people want information about that, it's 244-1693. And then the next day is the University of Illinois Turfgrass and Landscape Field Day on Thursday, August 2nd, out at the Landscape Horticulture Research Center. And it's a great opportunity to get some ideas about what's going on in the way of research at the University of Illinois when it comes to turfgrass and landscape. And if people have questions about that particular event on August 2nd, they can call at 217-333-7847. So a couple of great opportunities for people to get some information and also help out the U of I Arboretum.
Good. And I also wrote those numbers down, so if people didn't have a pen handy, they can call our office and we'll get them that information. Well, we'll have to stop there. Sandy Mason has been our guest. She's horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. And thanks again, Sandy.
Thank you.